It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
What a week of free agency and trades. Of course, once the rush of that week ends, the NFL goes back to being somewhat quiet for a few weeks. But what do fantasy analysts do when the main wave of free agency ends? We draft. More than drafting for championships, we're drafting to get a feel for the change in the fantasy value for many players. With a post-draft already in the books for me and Anthony, today we get to talk about the new landscape. Welcome to the RotoWire Fantasy Football Podcast. I'm Jim Coventry, joined by Anthony Servino. We'll be doing a podcast on this platform every Monday. Remember to follow Anthony at The Real NFL Guru, and you could find me over at Jim Coventry NFL. Now, today's show will include Anthony and me going over early ADP based on a draft we were in Friday, March 15th. That draft was after most of the key free agents had signed. But before we get into that draft, couple pieces of news from the weekend. So, Anthony, Justin Fields goes to the Steelers for a sixth round pick. If he plays more than half the snaps, it becomes a fourth. Now, the Pittsburgh media, for what it's worth, think it's unlikely that they pick up Justin Fields' fifth-year option. They'd have to do that by early May. That would be $27 million, and that would be for 2025. So, all that said, what is Justin Fields' redraft value, knowing that Russell Wilson has been named the starter? He's making $1.2 million from the Steelers, so no money at all, veteran minimum. What are your thoughts on Justin Fields' redraft fantasy value?
He doesn't really have any right now, right? I mean, there would be or have to be a drastic issue with Russell Wilson or an injury for Justin Fields to see the field. So if you heavily invested into Fields, let's say in Dynasty, and he was supposed to be your quarterback one, you better have a backup plan.
So let's stick with redraft, though, again. And like you said, here's the problem. You're right. He doesn't have a job right now. And so people who are drafting early are going to be like, okay, well, scratch him. However, I said Russell Wilson making $1.2 million. They've told him he's the starter. But if he comes in and lays an egg in week one and Justin Fields has a good training camp, here's what I want everybody to think about. Arthur Smith is calling the shots on offense for the Steelers. We know it's a heavy run scheme, heavy play action base. Back in Tennessee, there's a few years back, Arthur Smith had Derrick Henry in the backfield. He doesn't have a Derrick Henry here, but he has two good running backs. But they had a great play action game with Ryan Tannehill and A.J. Brown. George Pickens is here, not A.J. Brown, but very good running after the catch, can be used on in breakers on play action. What if Russell Wilson struggles with that? Can somebody make a speculative pick on Justin Fields, knowing that Wilson's making minimum salary, that if he doesn't get it figured out in camp, that Fields could pass him? Or is it just way too risky?
I don't want to say that it can't happen. I think there's a path for it to happen.
Yes. And the problem people are going to have is if Fields gets a job, we know he can run. And we know that gives him crazy floor and it gives him real upside, even in a run-based offense. Again, for fantasy, not for NFL. And the two are worlds apart here. So, yes, like Anthony's saying, if you're in a best ball league, you could totally burn a pick by taking Justin Fields. But on the other hand, if he gets a starting gig for 7 weeks, he could also put your team over the top. So it's going to be interesting in redraft leagues as time goes. Now, Dynasty. Look, like we said, the Pittsburgh media doesn't think they're going to pick up his fifth-year option. That would mean at the end of the season, either Pittsburgh would try to re-sign him, maybe he's not even a starter. Maybe he's a free agent and the team decides to give him a chance. Or is it just kind of done for him?
I don't think it's quite done for Justin Fields because we have seen some good. Now, obviously, you know, he takes a lot of sacks. He needs to work on, you know, his passing and his accuracy. But I think if there was, I don't know what the word is, if he came with less baggage, maybe he's starting in the league today. But Justin Fields comes with some baggage. You know, like if Chicago kept him, right, because they're not really paying him a lot, they could have drafted whatever quarterback, Caleb Williams, number one, but you don't want that because Justin Fields has looked good and he does have a fan base. You know, there's a lot of places where he could have gone, but the starter would have been looking over his shoulder. So I think this is probably the best spot for him because Russell Wilson is going to go into week one as the guy, right? There's really not going to be an argument there, but there will come a point this season where if Russell Wilson is struggling, I can see Mike Tomlin pulling the plug because the Steelers also have to do their due diligence. They have, because how long does Russ have left? In reality, where they need to see if Justin Fields can play because you can pick up the option and you can re-sign him to be your starter long term. So I think there's a lot of avenues and a lot of different angles and a lot of different range of outcomes.
So all that said, it's a mess in Pittsburgh. If you draft Russell Wilson, he's a low floor, low ceiling fantasy play. He doesn't run anywhere near the level he used to. That level of athleticism is long gone. He'll be 35 this season. So he's difficult because if you draft him, and again, if he loses the job, that it gets very complicated. So basically, my advice is right now, unless you have a different plan, I'm just going to avoid the quarterback position in fantasy drafts for the Pittsburgh Steelers. Does that seem the wise course, or does there seem to be something otherwise?
Avoid it in your redraft leagues. I think in Dynasty, if the price is right, I would take a shot on, you know, because Russell Wilson in Dynasty, he's going to be really cheap in most one quarterback leagues, even in two quarterback leagues. And obviously, why not take a shot on Justin Fields? Because at this point, his value's in the tank. And then what you were kind of going into with best ball earlier, wherever he's going, I don't know where the ADP is going to fall out because the trade just happened. It might be worth taking Justin Fields as your Mr. Irrelevant if he lasts that long.
Yes, because we know what a running quarterback could do for fantasy. Yeah. All right, let's move to New York. The Jets add Tyron Smith, aging left tackle. I believe he's 33, but when he's on the field, he is still one of the best pass protectors in the league. Yeah. He's an above average run blocker, but it's not just Tyron Smith. Earlier, the Jets added Morgan Moses, the right tackle from Baltimore. And I don't know why Baltimore let him go, but Morgan Moses was still above average in pass pro, above average in run blocking. So the Jets have an excellent, in my opinion, pair of tackles to protect Aaron Rodgers. Last year, if it weren't for the New York Giants having such a horrible, horrible offensive line, people would have been talking about the Jets, but it kind of got swept under the rug because the Giants were so bad. The Jets had a terrible offensive line. They also, now we talk about the interior lines. We talked about Tyron Smith and Morgan Moses. That's a huge addition on the bookends. Even interior, they pick up John Simpson from the Ravens. Now, Simpson is not good in run blocking, but he's an adequate pass protector. Elijah Vera Tucker tore his Achilles last year. He is an average to above average guard. So the guard play will be decent. And the center, Joe Tippmann, who they drafted at pick 44 last year, he really struggled in pass pro, but he was a good run blocker, but he was a rookie. So it's possible he makes a second-year jump. My whole point with this, we talk offensive line. This is almost a brand-new line. Like Tippmann was a rookie, like I said, Vera Tucker come back, but three new players. Now we're talking about drafting Jets, and you'll also point out they added Tyrod Taylor in free agency. First of all, how are we approaching the trio of Aaron Rodgers, Breece Hall, and Garrett Wilson, knowing they're going from having a bad line to a potentially decent line?
You know, if you were in on the Jets last year when it comes to fantasy football, that means Breece Hall, Aaron Rodgers, Garrett Wilson, like that primary core. you might be a little bit skittish because they burned a lot of us, including myself. I was one of the biggest person on this Jets bandwagon because of the addition Aaron Rodgers, despite the fact that, hey, this offensive line could cause issues, and it did, you know, a minute into the season. With these offensive line additions so far this offseason, I think you have to buy back in, and I know it's a little bit worrisome. As a Cowboys fan, I know Tyron Smith well. He's a future Hall of Famer, and when he is on the field, as Jim said, he is still making a difference, and he's going to be the guy protecting the blind side of Aaron Rodgers. Another thing on top of the offensive line we need to take in consideration, the backup quarterback upgrade. Last year, you're a Garrett Wilson fantasy manager. You're a Breece Hall fantasy manager. You're worried because we already knew who Zach Wilson and Tim Boyle, we knew who they were. Now they bring in Tyrod Taylor. Now, Tyrod Taylor's not going to go out and win a Super Bowl, but he can manage football games. You know, he's had some good fantasy success in his career, and I would say he's a vast upgrade. I don't think that's exaggerating. He's a vast upgrade over Boyle and Zach Wilson. So with that insurance policy, I think we could be more comfortable going back and drafting Garrett Wilson and drafting Breece Hall.
Absolutely. And for those who are sports bettors, look, the Chiefs are obviously the clear favorite to win the AFC. But if the Jets could get some level of offensive line play, as we're hoping they will, Breece Hall could be an absolute monster behind a good line. Again, with the play action game, with Aaron Rodgers, with Garrett Wilson, Breece Hall, I already saw him as a top six pick in fantasy drafts. But with a real offensive line, are we talking about a player that if somebody really wanted a running back and CMC, Christian McCaffrey, was off the board, could somebody who wants a running back, could they realistically look at Breece Hall in a PPR league as the second pick if they don't want a receiver?
Absolutely. Now, there are some other guys who can and will challenge Breece Hall for that number two running back off the board, like a Saquon Barkley or possibly even Bijan Robinson. But there's certainly a conversation to draft Breece Hall that high.
The one thing I will say, and now I know Breece Hall's production last year was driven by a lot of dump off passes, and it was that the number of catches in that scenario was almost unsustainable. But the fact that behind such a terrible line with no credible passing attack and defenses completely stacked up to stop Hall, Hall still had a dynamic fantasy season. And Saquon Barkley, who was in an equally bad situation, maybe even a little better than Breece Hall's, was not quite that level of player. He couldn't overcome that. Both of them are in good scenarios. Certainly, we think Barkley's in a better place than Breece Hall in terms of scenario. And so it is interesting to think that. That said, I personally will put Breece Hall well ahead of Barkley. Are you considering otherwise on that?
I don't know if I'm going to say well ahead of Saquon Barkley, because, you know, I just said last week, I'm extremely high on Saquon Barkley in the landing spot with the supporting cast and the quarterback and the offensive line and all the upgrades he's had. Plus, we've already seen Saquon Barkley excel with the subpar supporting cast. So, like, I do think that the ceiling is sky high for Saquon. He could potentially challenge CMC when it's all said and done for the overall number one running back of fantasy football. So I don't think there's a vast difference. But if you play in a lot of leagues, I know we both do, I think there's, you know, I'm going to have my fair share of both.
100%. And that's the point. If you're listening and you play in one fantasy league, yes, you got to make, if you have a high pick, you've got to make the decision on which you want. But if you're a fantasy player listening on March 18th, you probably are playing in multiple leagues. And like Anthony said, if you like a running back early, then yes, diversifying is a great idea. You don't want to be tied in just to that one running back because, again, a lot of things can happen in an NFL season. It's a huge variant sport. That all said, now let's shift gears Anthony and I did a best ball draft on Friday, March 15th, after most of the free agent news had broken. We know that one draft is not indicative of all drafts, but we did this draft for the purpose of getting some early trends and reads on where players might go. Again, we understand the fluidity of this, and every draft is different. But let's start with the running back position. So earlier drafts before free agency, I noticed it was wide receiver heavy. We were seeing up to 8 up to 9 wide receivers in a 12-team league going in the first round. The particular draft we were in was different. 5 running backs went in the first round, and 7 running backs went in the first 15 picks. First of all, Anthony, based on the drafts you've done in this draft, is this draft an anomaly or an outlier, or do you think we're going to see more running backs taken early because the NFL free agency period made kind of a running back comeback? What are your thoughts on how first rounds will be handled?
You know, I feel like this early, even last year, it's wide receiver frenzy. And as we get closer to the regular season, the board adjusts and we see more running backs go. But no, like this offseason, all the drafts I've done so far have been wide receiver dominant. And, you know, if you take running backs early like I do, and I made some mistakes in this draft, you know, once you get to round 9 or 10, it seems really dry at the wide receiver position.
Yes, and that is my philosophy this year. And this took me a long time to buck this trend. I was always one, if there was value at running back, I was taking my running backs. This year, in all the drafts I've done, I am loading up on receivers early. And in a lot of my drafts, I'm going 4 wide receivers in these 12-team leagues. And I'm getting 4 number one options on their teams. And I'm not taking the Devontae Smith of the world. He's a number two. As great as he is, he's a number two. I'm getting 4 alpha receivers in my first 4 picks. Sometimes it's 3, and then I'm finding, and we'll talk later, that running backs will fall to me a little later. But let's circle back to the running backs where we're going to stay here. I did notice, and again, this is just one draft, probably an outlier. Jonathan Taylor was taken as the 4th running back off the board, 10th pick of the draft. And we'll do quick hits on these. With Anthony Richardson starting the season healthy, most likely, with probably some RPO elements, Taylor didn't play with Richardson last year. Is Taylor a good pick in the first round because of his scenario?
Yeah, I would say so, right? Because there was a lot of questions around Jonathan Taylor because he had that one huge year, overall RB1 back in 2021, and he didn't really look the same. And then last year, he only plays in 10 games, what was the overall RB12 in fantasy points per game. And he had some nice flash spots despite dealing with the injuries and the quarterback issues around him. So I'm certainly going to be back in on Jonathan Taylor because with a healthy Anthony Richardson, with a healthy Jonathan Taylor, I think we could see him revert back to form. And you got to remember, he's still only 25 years old. We're not talking about a 27, 20-year-old running back. You know, he popped in 2021, his second year in the league. He's entering his age 25 season.
Yes. All right. Do you ever think back to the golden days of fantasy football? You know, when it was all about the love of the game, the camaraderie, and yes, the bragging rights. Well, our friends at On Demand DFS are bringing back those days with their revolutionary app that's changing the game for fantasy fans everywhere. Gone are the days of confusing entry fees, playing against unknown masses, or juggling multiple apps to trash talk with your league mates. On Demand DFS is here to streamline your fantasy football experience, making it more about strategy, fun, and most importantly, the community. With On Demand DFS, you can create a contest in seconds, invite your friends, and you're off to the races. No entry fees, no gimmicks, just pure fantasy football bliss. And here's the kicker. You're not limited to current season players. Imagine crafting your dream lineup from over 5,000 NFL legends and today's stars using real historical data to simulate the action. And for those who hate the wait, you'll love Turbo Mode. Contests wrap up in minutes, not hours, keeping the excitement going all week long. Download the On Demand DFS app now and get started with a 30-day free trial. Dive into a fantasy football experience that's rich in history, strategy, and most importantly, fun. It's time to create your legacy with the ultimate lineup of legends and live out your fantasy football dreams like never before. Anthony, back to some running backs here. As we're talking through, we talked about Jonathan Taylor, and I agree. He's still young. He's had some factors work against him. He should be healthy. I think that's a very reasonable pick. Saquon Barkley, though, went as the seventh running back off the board early in the second round. Again, this draft went very heavy running back early. Is Saquon Barkley at RB7 a steal?
Absolutely. Again, we were just talking a few minutes ago how I think there's a conversation to be had that Saquon Barkley is the number two player off the board, certainly the number two running back. So anytime you can get a player of his pedigree with the new situation at pick seven, that's a smash. And he's not going to fall past that much longer. And I don't think he falls past four or five much longer.
Wow, yes. So it is wheels up, and the situation couldn't be better. His health the last couple seasons has been good for a running back. It's not the early in his career or he's missing a bunch of time. So right now he's still young enough and definitely wheels up. Now, Rashad White of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers was taken as the RB12. Last year, we know the deal. Rashad White won leagues for people despite being drafted outside the top 30 running backs. Volume was king in fantasy football. He got a ton of touches. He got a ton of receptions, and he cashed in. Is Rashad White a player to take that high?
As long as the Buccaneers don't drastically change their running back room, and I was one who believed they were going to add a more competent pass catching back, even though that's something that Rashad White's really good with. You know, a couple of years ago, they tried bringing in Chase Edmonds. He ended up coming back there last year. So it just felt to me like they were trying to add that type of a running back with that skill set. But so far, it's Rashad White, and it looks like Edmonds and Sean Tucker are still the three back. So as long as he's going to go into the season as the bell cow, then I'm fine taking him that high.
Yes, because again, and I'll repeat, volume is king in fantasy football. If the Bucs draft a running back, there's no certainty. Like Sean Tucker was a late, he's either seventh round or undrafted. I can't quite remember off the top of my head. But again, he just didn't earn a spot. He wasn't good. And so if the Bucs draft somebody, and this class of running backs is not one that's thrilling to many. And so it's possible that even if they draft one, that running back may not earn time. So Rashad White could easily find himself back in the mix. So just be careful with this, because there aren't many running backs left in free agency. So there's that. All right, let's one more running back that was taken as a top 15 before I go to some of the deeper picks. Aaron Jones, now of the Minnesota Vikings, went as the running back 15. It's my contention that Green Bay always were at fault for limiting his workload. He played 17 games 2 years ago. Now I know he missed six last year in time with others, but Minnesota, 1 year, $7 million. Aaron Jones will be 29. Minnesota has no reason like the Packers to kind of extend his career out. They could actually decide to use him up and play him three downs and let him play. Ty Chandler is not serious competition for Aaron Jones. Aaron Jones at running back 15, value or not?
Solid value because of what you just said. Wasn't really ever the guy in Green Bay. You look at the contract, you look at the age, it's a one-year deal. This certainly looks like a running back who's going to get possibly the most touches in the season he's ever had as long as he stays healthy. And this is a Minnesota team. Who's their quarterback? Darnold, possibly a rookie. And if it's going to be a rookie, they're going to lean on Aaron Jones that much more.
So running back value rounds in the sixth round, Joe Mixon of the Houston Texans, who probably has a three-down role, Damian Pierce, again, not serious competition, and the fact that the Texans traded for Mixon says they want him. Alvin Kamara in the sixth. He did play well with his chances last year. He will split some work, but he still saw the majority. And Ramondre Stevenson also in the sixth round. Are these players solid sixth-round values, or do you have issues with any of them at that point?
I think they're solid values, but the one that jumps out to me is Joe Mixon. And the reason for that is because we've seen him year in and year out contribute I don't want to say top end production, but at the running back position, you know, he's the guy. He was the guy in Cincinnati, and he's going to be the guy again in Houston. I'm willing to draft him in the sixth round, and I might be willing to draft him all the way up to the fourth round as we get closer to the season. And we just have, you know, I always like having clarity because it's early now. Anything can happen between now and kickoff. So I believe these boards will adjust. And so enjoy getting mixed in the sixth round while you can. I just don't see it lasting. I ultimately see him jumping up two rounds.
So the thing here is Rashad White, running back 12, Joe Mixon, like rounds later. To me, it's not even close. It's Joe Mixon all day long. Joe Mixon is a compiler. Make no mistake. He's below average broken tackle rate, below average yards after contact. He's a little above average yards after the catch, but he is a three down player and he is capable of 50 catches. He's capable at the goal line. And he has always, when he hasn't been challenged on a depth chart, given that volume. And at 28, he still has that in his range. So, yes, I would be much happier taking Mixon later than Rashad White earlier because nobody is likely to challenge Mixon for work. And then with Kamara and Stevenson, they're just volume plays. And if you waited on running back and you went wide receiver early, these types of players are waiting for you. Now, Stevenson could lose some receiving work to Antonio Gibson. We'll see. But Stevenson is going to take the two-down role. He's going to see red zone work. And people are undervaluing him because of last year. So Stevenson and Alvin Kamara, look, he's going to get his share of passes to him. And so if you're in a PPR league, solid value. Last player I want to bring, two players actually. Nick Chubb. I'm always the sucker taking him. I'm taking him in the late sixth. I'm taking him in the seventh. He's coming off the ACL. Even if he's not ready for week one, even if he's ready for week four, in a best ball format, I've been okay taking him. Am I an idiot? Why? Or what do you think about Nick Chubb being taken in the sixth or seventh round of drafts?
I mean, that's Nick Chubb at a discount. Now, how much time, if any, is he going to miss? Even if he starts on the pup, what is that? He comes back in week six?
4 weeks missed time.
Okay, so 4 weeks, that's a significant discount for Nick Chubb, who's probably going to come back and perform rest of season at an RB1 level. So, no, I don't think you're a sucker at all. I think that's a terrific value for a guy like Nick Chubb.
And I'm worried now that I'm becoming over-invested because when I just keep seeing him in the sixth or seventh round and I'm going receiver heavy and there aren't a lot of great names on the board, especially in the seventh, I'm glad to go there. Finally, Raheem Mostert was the RB3 last year. I know it's unsustainable. He had 21 touchdowns. You're not getting that again. And I know Devon Achane's in the backfield. Mostert's consistently going about running back 30, after 90 or so picks in a draft. He went at pick 102 here. Is this fool's goal to go with an over 30 back coming off of his two best seasons? Or do you just keep going back to the well and take the value?
I think you keep hammering the value until the wheels come off in these situations. You know, it's running back. And 9 times out of 10, it's usually the cheaper running backs that end up winning you the leagues.
You know, I wanted to be done with running backs, but these three running backs went in the seventh round. James Conner, same as last year, and I know he had a slow start, but if you had him on your team for the finish of the season, and he's always going to miss 3 or 4 games, that's the way it is, but you're getting him late, build that in. DeAndre Swift went in the seventh, and Tony Pollard went in the seventh. If you were in the seventh round of a draft, and you had Tony Pollard on the Titans, James Conner on the Cardinals, who now have Kyler Murray for a full season, or DeAndre Swift on the Bears, which of those three might you take in the seventh round, if any?
James Conner is one that keeps sticking out despite the injury time we're going to, you know, build into his value. He's the guy. He's always been the guy when he's on the field. He doesn't really concede touches to anybody. And this offense is better with Kyler on the field, obviously. So why not go with the guy who we know from the past, he's going to be the guy versus Pollard, who despite what they're paying him, Tajay Spears is still there. The Cardinals don't have a player like Tajay Spears behind Connor. And the same thing with DeAndre Swift. There's a loaded backfield in Chicago.
All right. Well, we'll talk about wide receivers after we take a short break.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right, at wide receiver in this draft, we noticed, and this is, again, a best ball draft that Anthony Servino and myself did on Friday, March 15th, after most of the free agents signed. The purpose, again, is to talk about some initial values on players after the dust settled. We know every draft is different, but again, we are just looking at some early values. In this draft, Amon-Ra St. Brown was taken as the wide receiver 2. Is that too high? The season he had last year was phenomenal. Is that a worthwhile pick, or would you have to wait a little later to take him?
I might wait a little bit longer. This is a you know, the wide receiver position in fantasy is obviously loaded. You got to remember, guys like Ja'Marr Chase is coming back. You know, Justin Jefferson, still Justin Jefferson. He's going to be healthy despite the quarterback change. You know, C.D. Lamb, what is he going to bring to the table after popping last year? And we know Dallas didn't do anything in free agency, so are we going to expect that same target share in production? So there's so many factors to where I would wait a little bit on Amon-Ra St. Brown or let the other guys have him.
All right, so I find myself like being the sucker in the field. The same players fall into me that tells me that I am apparently the outlier on this player. Michael Pittman near the end of the second round, 2.08. I'm getting him late second. I'm getting him early third. Nobody else seems to want him. His ADP is definitely behind where I'm taking him. Look, I saw what he did with Gardner Minshew. I did see very positive signs from Anthony Richardson. I don't quite know what he is as a passer yet, but I have to think that Pittman is going to see 140 targets in this offense. Josh Downs is a very nice player. He's going to do some great things. Alec Pierce is not really going to hog up many targets. It's not like they're going to run all day, but that said, Stephon Diggs, Marvin Harrison, Brandon Ayuk, Rashi Rice, we're still all on the board, and I took Michael Pittman. Talk about Michael Pittman, good, bad, indifferent.
I'm in on Michael Pittman. Now, in the past, I was never big on Pittman, but usually when I'm not big on these talented receivers, you know, like DJ Moore, Terry McLaurin in the past, was because of their situation. Well, the situation changed last year for Michael Pittman. He was no longer going in the fourth round. I was getting Pittman 4 rounds later than that. So I'm like, you know what? Why not? There's going to be a quarterback change. I like Minshew a little bit in case it went to him, and it worked out. Pittman won me leagues. He also showed that he can operate at a high level in the new system with the quarterback change. And now we're going to get Anthony Richardson, who we believe is better than Gardner Minshew as a passer. So things should only go up for Michael Pittman. Plus, we have a little bit of a sample size with those two together, and it was pretty good. So I'm 100% fine taking Michael Pittman, who's the de facto wide receiver one in that Indy wide receiver room. Like, you know, we didn't hit the draft yet, but his competition, Downs, Pierce, Amari Rodgers, give me Michael Pittman all day at that price point.
I have to think that Michael Pittman has a floor of 90 catches. He has to have a floor of like 1,100 yards. The ceiling might not be a lot higher. It might be 1,250. He's certainly not going to be your top 5 receiver. But I certainly think that he can finish as a top 12 in PPR. But if not, he's definitely finishing, you know, in that border range. Final words?
Does your opinion change if Indy takes a wide receiver of note in the draft?
Because he is that X alpha receiver, and he has already shown the ability to be press man. He's great in zones, the big body type. I don't see Indy making an investment in any type of high end receiver. Even if they took somebody, the alpha is going, they just paid him. Yeah. They paid him long-term. He's their guy.
Yeah.
I'm going to say, no, I am not going to worry if they take somebody in the draft. But what do you think? Would you be worried?
When I say wide receiver of note, I'm saying one of the top guys. We know that, and again, it's a long shot. It happens, but we've seen teams make that luxury pick in the past. So I'm just throwing it out there. But you know, it would have to be, you know, one of the top 5-6 wide receivers for me to be like, oh, maybe I'll pump the brakes a little bit. Outside of that, I'm all in.
Last year, Drake London was taken about the wide receiver 22. He had a number of really good games at home. He was horrible on the road, games where he had zeros. Certainly now, Zach Robinson is going to run the offense as opposed to Arthur Smith. They go to Kirk Cousins at quarterback. Drake London was taken as the wide receiver 17 in this draft. Was Drake London taken at his ceiling, or is this going to be a good pick that could pan out being even better than the wide receiver 17 cost on Drake London?
No, I'm going to go back to what I said about Pittman in the past and the guys like McLaurin. And last year, London was in that mix because I hated the situation at quarterback. No matter where you turned, it was a bad quarterback for Drake London. The same thing with Kyle Pitts. Outside of Dynasty, had very little to no shares in redraft. The whole story changes now with Kirk Cousins. Not only do we get a competent quarterback, we have a very, very good quarterback with a positive track record of supporting fantasy assets. So all of a sudden, I'm going to be, you know, depending on, I guess, where I get Drake London and how other drafters are taking him, if I can get him at that price point, I'm going to be all in, and I don't think it's drafting him at a ceiling. I think he could potentially be a top 12 wide receiver with Kirk Cousins. Look at the rest of the receivers around him. I get they addressed it in free agency with the trade for Rondale Moore and Darnell Mooney, who I love, but it's Kirk Cousins. He usually leans on one receiver and his tight end. And it's obviously going to be Drake London. So I'm going to be extremely bullish on this guy.
Drake London was a high first round pick for Atlanta. Yeah. What he has shown us when they have utilized him is he is that level of player. He's very physical. His body gives him a great catch radius, very inviting target. He is very good after the catch. Again, when the pass leads him into traffic, there were a lot of times when Desmond Ridder threw a pass behind him. There's no run after the catch on those. That's not going to happen with Kirk Cousins. That's a very important point of delineation, that when you have a quarterback that can lead you into traffic, those yards add up in a hurry. And I do think Drake London is the physical force against today's zone defenses. It's going to be a big advantage for the Falcons to have him. And I do believe no matter how good Kyle Pitts is, they have other situational receivers. And I know they have a running game with Bijan, but I would be surprised if Drake London didn't see a minimum of 120 targets. I don't think he's in that 160 range, but at least 120. And yes, if you're telling me that, it's a different ball game.
Even at the 120 targets, they're Kirk Cousins type targets. It's not going to be Ridder targets anymore. They're going to be more efficient and effective targets.
And that's a massive, massive difference. So yes, buying on Drake London. Deebo Samuel's next. He fell in this draft, and he's fallen in a number of drafts I've been in. Wide receiver 22. Now, we know he had that beautiful season now 3 years ago, but he hasn't reached anywhere near those levels of production. We saw him, although not missing a lot of time, we saw him miss a little time and get banged up a lot. He's had an injury history for much of his career. So at wide receiver 22, is that the point where it's a value on him, or is he just a scary player and we never know the weeks he's going to get the ball? what's the concerns with Deebo Samuel, or do you like him there? Wide receiver 22.
I have concerns, and I'm scared to take him. Now, again, the injury history, plus look where he's playing. Look at that team, the offense, it's loaded. We know the offense runs through CMC. He's always going to get his. But it always seems to be there's CMC plus one. 1 week, that plus one could be Ayuk. Another week, it's going to be Kittle. Another week, it's going to be Deebo. Another week, it could be Juwan Jennings, who they retained in free agency. So there's just so many guys, but the fact that it runs through CMC, and if you just look, there's always that plus one, and there's too many other plus ones for me to buy into Deebo Samuel that high.
So I am also terrified to take Deebo. There are just too many red flags around it, and it's the 49ers offense. It's like George Kittle to be the same player. It's like you draft Kittle, you got to spend a somewhat premium pick on him, and you're going to have a lot of low games. But I tell people, you have to start him. If you're going to spend that pick on him and the situation doesn't change, you're forced to start him every week. And it's just too much volatility for my liking. All right. So the next player, I almost took a fifth straight receiver to start the draft. I should say five and six picks. In my fifth round, I was looking at running backs. Christian Kirk was on the board. He ended up falling to 6.05 in a 12-team league. Christian Kirk is the clear number one in Jacksonville. Now, do they draft somebody? Maybe, and that could change his equation. Right now, it's Gabe Davis, good luck, Zay Jones, Tim Jones, Parker Washington. These are the receivers. Now, Evan Ingram is going to certainly play in. Christian Kirk, we saw 2 years ago, in the second half of the season, in 2022, when Trevor Lawrence made that move forward, Christian Kirk was a strong weekly fantasy option. With him, in my opinion, being the number one in the sixth round, wide receiver 36, for me, that is a massive value, and I will take that all day long. What are your thoughts on Christian Kirk?
Yeah, absolute smash spot. I was actually looking at Kirk, and you sniped me during this draft. But, you know, I like what he did a few years ago. First year with Trevor Lawrence, wide receiver, 18 fantasy points per game. And we're getting him at a discount. Ridley's no longer here. I think the Jags get better, right? They made some nice, or at least one nice addition at center on the offensive line. They retained Brandon Scherff. They knew this offensive line was an issue, so it's good that they made a little bit of an upgrade in free agency here. And maybe we saw a little bit of a regression from Trevor Lawrence, and a lot of people are out on Lawrence. A lot of people are out on the Jaguars as a result. I think we see a little bit of a bounce back this season because the Jaguars, got to remember, in 2022, they exceeded expectations. And to me, the Urban Meyer year was a mulligan for Trevor Lawrence. So last year, I looked at it as, hey, this is his first year his second year under Doug Peterson. I was expecting a little bit of a regression.
Yes. So that said, we are both bullish on Christian Kirk as the wide receiver 36. Get him a little bit earlier. Reach up a little bit to get him because he could be, you know, your borderline wide receiver 2, wide receiver 3 in PPR leagues. A couple quick hits here. Wide receiver 41 and 42 are Chris Godwin and Marquise Brown. I want to focus on Marquise Brown. Mm-hmm. Now, he signed a low one-year deal with the Chiefs. He makes far less money per season than Darnell Mooney did, than Gabe Davis did. It was like a one-year prove-it deal. Now, I know Marquise Brown has missed some time, but for the most part, he's been reasonably healthy, reasonable enough, and he's now in that Chiefs offense. What do you think about Marquise Brown on the Chiefs at wide receiver 42?
Big time value. Now, in this draft, he was one of the guys I was targeting, but I wanted to take him a round or two higher. But then I looked, he was buried ADP-wise, so maybe I'll wait and see if I can get him, and then you get sniped. I guess it's so early where even I make these mistakes where if I want to go get my guy, I should go get my guy. And I made that mistake a few times in that draft. But I would take Marquise Brown a little bit higher, maybe a round or two. This is the best quarterback situation, the best offense he's ever been in. We've seen him perform at a high level at times in his career. Now I think he's going to get that consistency in the offense and the consistency at quarterback. And he's not going to be the one. It's going to be Rashee Rice. So Marquise Brown could probably have a career year.
It's barely over 1,000 yards that he had with Baltimore in 2021. He easily could sail over that. His hands are a slight bit questionable, but I think those actually were better in Arizona than they were in Baltimore. Yeah. So, yeah, wheels up on Marquise Brown. While the value's there, definitely consider this because Andy Reid wants to pass the ball. If he doesn't have the ability to pass the ball like last year, he's going to run the ball. But if Marquise Brown jump starts this passing game, don't think for a minute that Andy Reid's not going to go back and say, Mahomes, it's back on your shoulders. All right, so last one I want to talk about very quickly. Darnell Mooney went in the 13th round of this best ball draft. He is now likely, in my mind, the number two in Atlanta, 3 years, $39 million. It'll be obviously Kirk Cousins at quarterback. You got Drake London. You got Kyle Pitts at tight end. You got Bijan Robinson. I know there are three players that will likely command the ball, but Mooney in the 13th round, quick thoughts.
This is another one of my guys that I missed out on. I was ready to pull the trigger in round 10 for Darnell Mooney. I am that high on the upgrade, just like Marquise Brown, the quarterback and the situation. And we've seen Mooney a couple of years ago when he was the guy. He did flash and perform at a pretty high level. And he shows that he can handle more targets than he's seen the past 2 years with Chicago. But again, you look at where he is. Oh, he's buried. I could wait. I got to stop. And I think we all could learn this lesson. If you think a player's worth taking, then you got to go get him. Because if you wait too long, he's not coming back.
All right, let's go for shortly on tight ends. There were very few surprises in the tight end drafting, but I want to focus on three. The first one I want to focus on is almost obvious to most. In the past years, Travis Kelce was always a first-round pick, first 4 to 6 picks, because he could lap the field and it wasn't close. Last year, look, it may the early season injury, the end of the season through the playoffs, especially in the playoffs, he was dynamite in the playoffs. So now it's like, what do we have? He went in the middle of the second round. So obviously a full round discount on where he went. Is he still that player that gives you an edge on the tight end field? Or with another year into his 30s, is he now, yes, he's the tight end one or tight end two with LaPorta, but is he now one of those top five kind of glumped together? Because is he maybe not going to lap the field? What are your thoughts on Kelce in the second round?
Well, I'm the one who took Kelce in the second round. And I like Kelce because, again, he's usually going in the first round. I get he had a little bit of a drop-off last year. I'm going to put that more on he came into the season injured, and he never really had that time to rest. And, yeah, he flashed in the playoffs. He got back to normal in the playoffs. Who's to say that's not going to be Travis Kelce after a full offseason of rest? He still has Mahomes. They want to run it back for a third straight ring. If I can get Kelce in the second, he might even fall to the third in some rounds. I still think you have to hit the draft button because he has been Mr. Consistency at the tight end position. We don't know if LaPorta is going to do it again. We don't know if these other guys are going to be able to replicate what we saw last year. Meanwhile, we've seen Travis Kelce do it year after year after year. So I will run it back, especially at a full round discount.
I'm not throwing any shade on Sam LaPorta here, but he was very touchdown heavy. Now, I know his yards in the 800 range, which is okay. That's a good tight end number, but that's not like the Kelce 1,300, 1,200 yards. It's an 800-yard season, which is great, but he was very touchdown heavy. And whenever we look at a player and we try to project a high touchdown total, that's a tough one. The running game could get more touchdowns on a certain year. Maybe Jamison Williams gets some touchdowns. So to project out double-digit touchdowns on a tight end, that's up. Now, can LaPorta make another leap upwards? Yes, he certainly can. It was his first year. There's a lot of range of outcomes. But it is important to understand that it wasn't like LaPorta was lapping the field because of his big weekly reception and yardage total. Very touchdown heavy. And that's not a knock on him. He may score that again, but just factor that into his analysis. Two quick hits at tight end. Last year, Darren Waller, there were a lot of people in love with him because we knew the past, but he was over 30. He had an injury history, and it was something I was very concerned about, and unfortunately, it was that way. Waller was not reliable and not on the field. He falls to the 17th round, at this point, now I know he's talked about retirement. I get that. But assuming he shows up in a best ball league, is Waller at least worth a 17-round pick if he plays 7 or 8 games?
Yeah, right. Because he's going to put something out there. I don't know if this Giants offense is going to be as bad as it was last year. It's going to be bad. But like, for where you can get Waller now, why not take a shot at him?
And the last one, if you're getting, if you're in a best ball league and you're drafting 2 and 3 tight ends, let's go beyond Waller. I 18th round, I may have taken. I don't remember who took him. I may have taken. I don't know if I did or didn't, but I think I was considering him. Mike Gesicki in the 18th round. He's 29 years old. Tanner Hudson was very heavily used as a receiver because Irv Smith didn't pan out. Hayden Hurst had a good season 2 years ago because Burrow needs someone to throw to. Tyler Boyd, the slot receiver, hasn't signed back with them. It does not look like he's returning. Middle of the field's going to be needed. Mike Gesicki did have down years the last couple of years, not in a good situation. He's no longer likely has that elite athleticism that he came into the league with. But as a de facto tight end slot receiver for Joe Burrow, is Gesicki somebody to look at in the 18th round?
Absolutely. I'm going to be in on Gesicki. And this is another situation. You know, what's Cincinnati going to do at wide receiver? You know, Boyd's not coming back. I think they brought back Irwin. Are they going to bring in a receiver in the draft? They're going to go get a low one wide receiver 3. If it's not addressed, who's to say Gesicki can't fill or help fill that Tyler Boyd role?
Because he is, again, he still is an athlete, and he still has receiving chops. He just hasn't necessarily been used that way for a number of years. And I don't think it's because he's lost all of his talent. Certainly there's been a bit of a decline with age, but I don't, he's young enough where he could still perform. All right, let's go through a couple quarterbacks here. So obviously when you're drafting quarterbacks in best ball, the second tier of quarterbacks, the second group of them go higher because it's basically, you got to have 2 quarterbacks. It's like, it's almost like a super flex league because in best ball, you've got to have 2 and you probably want to have 3 if you can. So that pushes up the second tier of running backs, quarterbacks, I should say, after like the top 10 or so. All that said, the question I'll ask is, we talked about him last week on the show. Justin Herbert goes at quarterback 13 in the 9th round. That said, they likely, the Chargers, draft a wide receiver in the first round. I believe they have a top 5 pick, and that's a strong likelihood for them. Right now, they don't have anybody. Quentin Johnston, Joshua Palmer. Is Justin Herbert worth quarterback 13 value?
I considered it. I considered pulling the trigger on Herbert, but it just, like you said, there's nobody there. I wasn't a big Quentin Johnston guy last year. You know, Palmer's nice. Who knows what they're going to do in the draft unless they get a top receiver off the board. I just think there's so many question marks. And if you look at the other quarterbacks, like guys I ended up with, you know, of course I went back on Aaron Rodgers because I'll never learn my lesson. You know, Deshaun Watson, he gets the Jerry Jeudy upgrade. And I did take a stab at Daniel Jones because of his rushing ability. I'd rather go, especially in best ball, go handle the quarterback position with that type of a group over Justin Herbert, because I think if you're drafting Justin Herbert, you're hoping he's a magician out there. And, you know, there's maybe one guy like Josh Allen, who you can be pretty bare bone at wide receiver and he'll still bring that rushing floor. That's not Justin Herbert.
All right, let's move. Last year, Trevor Lawrence was across the board the quarterback 8. Obviously, he did not have a good season. He regressed. Now Calvin Ridley's gone for whatever that's worth. And we mentioned earlier, he has Christian Kirk. He has Zay Jones. He has Gabe Davis. He has Evan Ingram. He's quarterback 17. Is that about right, or are we just passing on Trevor Lawrence?
I think that's about right. I'm not ready to pass on Trevor Lawrence. Do I like that he lost Ridley? No, but he had his best season without Calvin Ridley, with really the guys on the roster right now. And again, we're getting a pretty significant discount on Lawrence compared to where we were drafting him last year.
Yes, I mean, mid-range quarterback too, as opposed to a solid starting range fantasy quarterback. It's a big discount. And who knows, maybe they do draft a receiver. I mean, my thoughts are they would probably need to, but that organization not really one to be trusted. And Press Taylor, the offensive coordinator, you know, very nerve-wracking for me. One more quarterback. Look, last 2 years, Jared Goff has been a legitimate top starting quarterback, like top eight last 2 years. Continues to be ignored in drafts. Quarterback 18. I know there will be down weeks, and whether it's best ball or redraft, he gets no respect. The numbers at home are better than on the road. If he faces teams that could pressure heavily, it's kind of rough for him. But I can't say avoid Jared Goff at quarterback. Every year now, he's getting it done. He has Ben Johnson. He has weapons. The defense may improve. They're still going to throw. What are your thoughts on Jared Goff?
Look at where we can draft Jared Goff right now. It's like perennially he gets disrespected. And I think a lot of the reason why is that he has little to no, it's like he has the Kirk Cousins rushing floor, which is nothing. So we're relying on him to put up fantasy numbers as a passer. And that seems like so 5 years ago, but it still works. And you know, you still win games in the NFL that way. And Jared Goff was the QB7 overall. He was the QB11 fantasy points per game. He gets his OC back. I think we get a little bit more of Jameson Williams unleashed. You have Amon-Ra St. Brown. You have so many moving parts in this offense to where why not draft Jared Goff, because he's been performing and the price isn't increasing. It's pretty much staying the same, which is absurd.
Yes. And so when I'm drafting, even if it's a regular redraft league and I need a second quarterback, I'm definitely taking Jared Goff in consideration because he just keeps getting it done. Now, later in the season, when we get the schedule launch and we find out when his home and his road games are, it could be one where you look at matching him with another quarterback. You kind of look for a quarterback that you might draft. And if Goff's home games coincide with either bye weeks or a rough patch for a borderline starter you drafted, there'll be other variables. But as right now, yes, Jared Goff is an extreme value in drafts. All right, we enjoyed everybody hanging out with us today. For Anthony Servino, I'm Jim Coventry. Thanks for listening. Come back next week for another edition of the RotoWire Fantasy Football Podcast.